So let's talk a little more about Shoot of the Dainey, and we'll try to wrap this up today, and maybe we'll even start the next sugya. It's a short one for us, and then we'll keep going. Okay, so we were discussing the general ramifications of the concept of Shoot of the Dainey, and again, we had the machlokes Rashi Rabbeinu Tam, which is fairly the basic yisod that the different Rishonim take sides on. What is the purpose and the goal and the function of Shoot of the Dainey in terms of how it works? Right, so we said, Rashi says that Shudda D'Dayane is a manifestation of what halachic concept?
Umdana.
Right? It's a concept of Umdana that the Dayanim employ their basic people skills and knowledge, and they try to figure out who should have won. Who should have won the case? We don't have evidence to say who did win the case, but we have evidence to say who should have won the case. Right? And they try to figure out which friend was closer with this individual, who did the guy like better, who would he have given the gift to in the case of Shnei Shtaros, and what did not mean a lot of other possible cases, try to figure out what's the psychology of the individual. Rabbeinu Tam, based on a number of Gemaras, some of which we've mentioned already, Rabbeinu Tam says, you cannot say that Shudda D'Dayane is based on Umdana. You have to say that Shudda D'Dayane is based on... We don't know. We don't know. It's a peladik or a benetam. We don't really know why or how, but it's really, it's almost a classic rabbeinatam thing to do. I wouldn't say classic rabbeinatam, a classic Tosfos thing to do. Tosfos from time to time, this is not a good example for rabbeinatam, as I'll mention in a second. Tosfos from time to time, we find such a thing. Two examples pop into my head. One is in Chulin. In Chulin, as we know, there are Chulin is in the middle of Kudshim, but it's the anti-Kudshim Masechta. It's all about non-Kudshim. There are two things, and you have Kudshim, you have Chulin. So Chulin is a break from Korbanos and the like, and it talks about what we call in modern terms Hilchos Kashrus, right? So it's all about Hilchos Kashrus. So we have some of the earlier Prakim are related to, they're all very closely related to Hilchos Kashrus, but some of them are only really if you're in the profession, right? That you talk about Hilchos Kashrus in terms of, if you ask somebody, what's the most important thing in Hilchos Kashrus? They'll tell you. It's the early prakim of Chulin, right? Hilchos Shchita, Hilchos Trefos, right? Things like that. That's the important parts. So that's actually true, but not for us. Meaning you can become, you can get a very lovely smicha certificate nowadays, never having learned Hilchos Shchita, never having learned Hilchos Trefos. I am actually one of those people. I did learn Hilchos Shchita, but that was on my own. But the most smicha programs nowadays do not require Hilchos Shchita. They don't require Hilchos Trefos either. And I think they said why you took Malicha off the curriculum as well. Malicha is it's not the most exciting topic, but for whatever reason, I really liked it. I mean, still like it, but I really I found it very enjoyable to try to troubleshoot all the cases, and it's really all troubleshooting. There's basically three rules of Malicha, and then everything else is just troubleshooting. But you have to like really make charts and try to figure out how. And it's not, again, not the super productive, and they still. And then when you want to become a rabbi nowadays, they just make you learn Basu B'Cholim and Tarumas, and which are yeah, the other things now. Yeah, well, they always had that when I was there. They had a fourth year Halacha L'maisa. Yeah. Yeah, okay, that's all. Oh, they're all excellent topics. I mean, you technically have to know everything, but we spent a little bit of time on different topics in addition to that. But it's basically Basakal Taroves, you know. Why you there a little more thorough than most? So they also, you know, you have to do Hilchos Nida, and you have to do Hilchos Avelus. And you know, but most smichas you just do bas v'chol tarovis, maybe malicha and zehu. Like you just you know, you're on your own. Good thing Shabbos doesn't come around once every 7 days, so no one's ever going to ask you a question about that. But the lemaisa Maseches Chulin is it's a very important limud. It's a gateway to really understanding a lot of halacha. So there's a lot of discussion in Hilchos Basar V'Cholov, which come to the later prakim of Maseches Chulin. So you have the Gemaras in Kol HaBasar where they talk about Basar V'Cholov, And Tosfos raises the issue on the Mishnah, which discusses ha'alah ala shulchan, right? They talk about putting on the table milk, you know, are you allowed to have milk and meat together on the same table? Are you allowed to have milk and meat together on the same countertop? And what is the real chashash? So the Gemara discusses it. So the Mishnah says you're not supposed to have milk and meat on the same table. By the way, what did the Mishnah mean when it said don't put milk and meat on the same table? Right? It didn't mean what we do. It didn't mean put them down. You have a milchik plate, you put down the milchik plate on the table, and you have a fleshik plate, and you put the fleshik plate down on the table. It meant on the table. It meant that you slap it down on the table, you slap it down on the table. Obviously, if it was in a bowl, you know, it had to be in a bowl. But Lamaisa, we also don't do that. We don't put milk down in a plate on the table. We don't put meat down on the plate on the table. We avoid that as well. So, and then the Gemara says, what's the big deal? What are we afraid of? What's going to happen? So I said, well, you're going to end up mixing the two together. And the Gemara says, so what? Who cares? Meaning, where is it now? It's in a kli sheni. Let's say we're talking about it's in bowls, right? You have it in a bowl. You have a dairy soup and a cholent, and they're both in bowls. So both of those are in a kli sheni. So what's the worst that could happen? So they say, the Gemara says, no, shema yala be'ilfa rosachas. Maybe you'll put it in the kli rishon. You'll put the kli rishon right down on the table. So if you have the cholent pot, you have the crock pot on the table, and then you have the milchik soup on the table, so you'll accidentally even put the milchik soup into the kli rishon, and that constitutes basar v'chala of deoraisa. If they're both being a kli sheni, so that wouldn't constitute basar v'chala of deoraisa because they're not being cooked together, right? You know, we assume la halacha. You know, obviously we have hanhagos that we don't go like this, but we assume basically that a kli sheni ain't a mavasho. But if so, if it would be a bowl of cholent and a bowl of dairy soup, there wouldn't be a problem min haTorah for you to mix them together. It would only be a problem midrabanan that you're not supposed to eat milk and meat together, even if it wasn't cooked together. But the Gemara says so. The real gzera was don't put them on the same table because maybe you're going to put the pot down on the table, right? You with me on this? So Tosvos over there. So first of all, it's funny. Like I remember, I taught an SK for 1 year. It was a number of years ago. It was about I think 11 years ago. So I taught an SK for 1 year. So I did Hilchos Basar V'Challah with them in a truncated format. So we did this Gemara, mentioned the Gemara, and they were like, "What are you talking about? That'll never happen." Blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, "No, it's a thing." Like I couldn't remember what it's called. But it's something I said we have it in my house. They're like, oh, you put pots on the table in your house? I'm like, no, we have it. After the fact, I remembered it's called oven to tableware. Like it's a real thing. You take it out of the potato kugel out of the oven. You put it in one of those trivets. You know what I'm talking about? Those things that look like accordions, right? So you put it in the accordion thingy and you put it on the Shabbos table. It's considered nice. It's not like putting pots and pans on the table. It's considered nice. So, and it's not just my house. I've been to many, many homes where this is what they do. So you do have a kli rishon on the table very often. You could sometimes take a roast right out of the oven in a fancy ceramic thing, and you put it right on the table. Assuming, forget about Dover Gush for a second, like the roasted Dover Gush. That could be, you know, another example of where it could be a din d'oraisa, that if you have a piece of meat, if you have a corned beef or roast beef or whatever, and it's cut into slices, and then you put it into a serving plate and you put it on the table. So, according to Marshall and others, that's still considered a kli rishon min haTorah because a kli sheni is only when it takes the form of its container. So here the meat doesn't take the form of its container. So that could still be considered a kli rishon min haTorah. But okay, the Mishnah didn't, the Gemara didn't suggest that. Maybe Bedafka the Gemara didn't suggest it, but okay, so Tosfos over there says, I don't get it. So we have a gzera, don't put a kli sheni on the table, lest you come to put a kli rishon on the table. Right? And you put a kli rishon on the table, what's going to happen? You still didn't violate Basar V'Challah. You hear? Still didn't violate Basar V'Challah. So what's going to happen next? You're then going to take the cholent and you take the dairy soup and pour it into the kli rishon. Right? Okay, so what do we call that? It's a double gzera at least. right? It's a double gzeira. So you say, well, it's not a triple gzeira because there actually is an iser de oraisa to cook basar v'chalav together. So pouring the milk into the chulent, if it's in a kli rishon, counts as cooking, and that would be a violation of a d'oraisa right then and there, even if you never eat it. So Tosfos says, yeah, you're right. You know, sometimes, usually we try to weasel out of those. We say, kulachad gzeirahu. It's all one gzeira, right? So that's the usual answer. One is, isn't it a gzeira and a gzeira? Not kulachad gzeirahu, right? It's all one gzeira. Normally you can figure that out and figure out what the gzeira was. But here, Tosfos doesn't say that. Tosfos says, you're right. It is a gzeira and a gzeira. Sometimes they do it, right? And Tosfos says, yeah, Tosfos is fairly, as you can tell by just reading any Tosfos, they're fairly familiar with Shas. And they say, like, we can't figure out when they make Zeron and Zeron and when they don't. It says, whenever the Gemara says you do it, that's when you do it. And that's Ein Ladamos. I don't want to say the wrong lush. It's Ein Ladamos Gzeres Chazal. Right? Don't try to compare and contrast the different Gzeres to try to figure out rules for when we do make a Zeron and Zeron and when we don't. Right? It's one of those things. You can't... one thing you see for sure... when you learn, you know, when you learn Chulin and you learn Yoredeya, is Chazal had it in for Basar V'Chalav. They wanted nothing to do with Basar V'Chalav. They put Gzeiras on top of Gzeiras on top of Gzeiras on top of Gzeiras. They, for whatever reason, and I'm sure it was a good one, Chazal knew that Basar V'Chalav is bad for the Jews. So they just wanted to keep people very far away from it. But Tosfos says you can't be Madama. It's basically Tosfos' way of saying, I don't know what the rule is, but there probably is one. Just whenever the Gemara says it, that's when you do it, and that's the end of it. We're not going to make a rule, right? Similarly, the other Gemara that came to mind was the Gemara in Psachim, where the Gemara in Psachim discusses the bracha you're supposed to make on biur chametz, right? So there's machlokes livaer al biur, right? And then in the end, they say that the halacha is al biur chametz. That's the Gemara's maskana. And Tosfos is not really sure why. Tosfos says it's not really. It's not the Rabbeinu Tam. I think it's the Ri. Anybody remember that Tosfos offhand? I think it's the Ri. So it's dafka not Rabbeinu Tam because I think the Rush quotes Rabbeinu Tam who has a reason for it. I think the Rush quotes Rabbeinu Tam who says he gives a whole hesber for when you say al and when you say le. But I think it's the Ri. So there, Tosfos says a similar vort. They say, "Hilchsa al biur chametz yachlu lo markin." He says, doesn't mean you have to say al biur chametz. You could say livaer, right? She'af ze haloshen mashma lehaba, right? And then he says, "Oh, shema dafka al biur chametz." Maybe you dafka have to say al biur chametz. Maybe you have to, right? And then he says, "V'yesh tam bebracha." So maybe there is some reason when you say al versus when you say li. Right, you ever wonder about that? Sometimes we say al natilas lulav, al natilas yadayim, and sometimes we say, I don't know, what's a li example? Li haniach tefillin, right? What? Sorry, li hadlik ner shel Shabbos shel Hanukkah, etc. Right. So we have lis and we have als. So then he says maybe there is a reason. V'ri lo matzatam l'chol abrachas. The ri couldn't find the reason. He couldn't figure out when we say al, when we say li. So those are a couple of examples where Tosfos says, like, there probably is a reason, I just don't know what it is. Right? So this is not the same, obviously, but you see, it's like a little bit in the spirit of the Tosfos school of thought that we don't have to have a good explanation for every single thing. So sometimes you can learn up all of Shas really well, and you don't know the reason. You don't know what the pshat is. So here, this is a little different, obviously. This is Rabbeinu Tam saying, shuda de dine is you don't have to have a reason. It's whatever reason you want. You can just give it to whomever you please, and that's fine. Okay. So, among the Gemaras that Tosfos brings to try to prove their point, we mentioned one very strong raya, which was the case where they had to retry the case, right? So they couldn't, the nemunis of the dayan to say who won the case. And then they say, well, why don't you just retry the case? What do you need nemunis for? And they say, no, it's a case of shudu de dayane. So Rabbeinu Tam says, It's case of Shuda Dedaine. Pashtus is that if it's based on Umdana, you think you're so different today than you were back then, you'll probably have the same Umdana today that you had back then, faced with the same evidence. Right? So therefore, it's a raya that Shuda Dedaine is not necessarily based on anything that's tangible. It's not really based on something you can put your finger on and say, that's why I decided. Right? It could have been because the guy, one litigant was dressed in a really nice Italian suit, and I love Italian suits, or it could have been because he was dressed in a nice Italian suit, and I hate Italian suits. It could have been anything. You know, I Dafka wanted him to win because he was wearing a blue yarmulke, and he was wearing a pink yarmulke, and I love blue yarmulkes, I love pink yarmulkes, it doesn't matter why. I just decided I wanted that guy to win. So he shows up to court now. The other guy's wearing a pink yarmulke and this guy's wearing a blue yarmulke. So, I hate this guy now and I love that guy. So now I'm gonna decide differently. So that's a very interesting raya for Rabbeinu Tam. Although, you know, it's not a tremendous kasha on Rashi, right? Like they say, I think Rabbi Shurkin, in the introduction to the first volume of Harei Kedem, writes this. He says, don't ask me any kashas if you see a shtickle. You guys know the sefer Harei Kedem? It's a very nice sefer. Right, so Rav Michal Shurkin, is he still alive? He's a very old man. So he, what is he? What? Still gives shir? Beautiful, beautiful. He's not a, I don't know, when I was in Israel 20 years ago, he was not, didn't come off as a very young man. So I just, Baruch Hashem. No, he never was a student in YU. He was a very, he likes to make trouble. He's a, he's a real personality. He's a real troublemaker. What he wants to do. Yeah. He's a gishmak. So he, whatever. If you can take it, it's a lot of fun. So he writes in the introduction to one of this forum that don't ask me why sometimes the lumdus will go one way and then two pieces later the lumdus is going to go a different way. He says, because I'm writing over the number of years that I was hearing these shurim. So, and Rav Soloveitchik's policy was, he always wanted to relearn the sugya from scratch. He didn't want to say, well, I remember 20 years ago I learned this gemara and I said that Tosfos holds the din in the Chefza and the Rambam holds the din in the Gavra. So like I'm going into the sugya based on those premises. No, he didn't want to learn like that. He wanted to learn the whole thing over from scratch and try to see if it plays out. However it plays out, it plays out. Ke'ilu, you can try as best as you can to forget however you learned the sugya previously or learn it again. And people would say, but you know, 5 years ago you said this, and that. Don't ask me about what I said 5 years ago. This is what I'm saying now. And that's what Rav Shechter said. He used to say that all the time. Don't ask me what I said. This is what I'm saying now. So you could have such a scenario that, as Rav Shechter said, 90%+ of the time he would come to the same maskana that he did 5 years ago, but you know, a few times here and there he would come to a different maskana. So Rashi is understandable that it's possible that even in a case where you did a shuda based on an umdana, it's possible that you have a different outcome because you're looking at life a little bit differently for whatever reason based on experiences or just based on there are many legitimate ways to view a sugya. There are many legitimate ways to view a din Torah. Baharaya, you have three dayanim. They're all Talmidei Chachamim. They all are trying to be as objective as possible and looking at the case. And one dayan says one way, one dayan says the other way. How could it be if they're both good dayanim? So one guy knows how to learn, one guy doesn't know how to learn? Yeah, that's what they would say about the other one right now. But Lamaisa, they both know that's not true. They both know that the other guy knows what he's talking about. And yet, they're coming to opposite conclusions. So it is shaykh to say that if I had to retry a case, I would come to a different conclusion. Right, and that's, we saw that in Rav Yashiv's thing when he said that when it comes to giving a limud schus to the Talmud Chacham, so Rav Yashiv said that maybe the pshat is that you have, he said, every dayan admits, Rav Yashiv was a dayan for many, many years, and he said every dayan will admit that it's, if I would think about it for another hour or two, maybe I'll come to a different conclusion. This is what I'm saying with the normal hashtadlus that I'm going to put in, with the normal amount of, you know, lo nitnatur l'malach ha'asharis. I'm just trying to analyze the case as best as possible. It's possible that I would come to another conclusion if I would have another, you know, another 3 hours to think about it. But I don't have another 3 hours to think about it because I can't spend my whole life on one case. So you have to give your psak now. So it could be, guy comes back 2 years from now or 2 minutes from now, you'll come to a different conclusion. It's possible. So this is not really a big riot against Rashi, but it does give you food for thought. Rabbi Natan, it does, it's a little smoother according to Rabbi Natan. It's not a riot against Rashi, but it's smoother according to Rabbi Natan. So, you know, but again, very important to keep in mind that Rashi touches up all of these Gemaras exactly the way he does. He's not like, he's not scared of any of these Gemaras. Rashi, on the spot, says his pshat every time. You know, it's not like, sometimes you get a Rashi, you get a stira in a Rashi, you get a Gemara that Rashi didn't comment on, you say, maybe Rashi would have said something differently in light of that Gemara. Here he says the same thing every time. So you know he's not scared of any of these Rashis. So it's important to keep that in mind, that you don't have to start draying around trying to figure out a different pshat in Rashi. He says what he means. Yeah?
I think Rashi elsewhere.
Yeah, what did he say? So he said, "Ain't Tully the Tom."
El the Master, no delay to die. So I'm like, I'll justify it, but I'm going to keep my conclusion first based on what I like, and then justify it with smart, as opposed to make a comment and then come to your conclusion.
So yeah, the truth is, you're right. The truth is that Rashi, I'm only saying it because I was, either negatively or positively influenced by the other Rashis. You know, that Rashi. Had you seen that Rashi in a vacuum? So then you might not have learned it that way, right? No, that's what I'm saying. I'm agreeing. It could be, but you know, it could be that if you only had that Rashi in a vacuum, you would learn Rashi a little bit differently, right? It's possible. So I don't know. That's always one of those, I don't know how influenced I'm supposed to be. We know Rabbi Natan was influenced by the other Rashis. Okay, but maybe that's not fair. Maybe that's not what, a lot of times when Tosa says, oh, Rashi says this, you know, the easy answer is, that's not what Rashi said at all. You know, so it is possible that in that case, Rashi would say, it's Ein Tully B'Tam Klal, just like Rabbi Natan. Maybe. But Prashtas is what he means is that it's not Tully in halachic reason, it's Tully in an Umdana, that this is what I think should be the case. Not like, this is what I feel like doing, which sounds like Rabbi Natan. This is what I feel like doing, right? I like red shirts. Like, I just love them, so I got to give it to the guy in the red shirt because there's no reason for me to give it to A versus B, so I just got to go with the red shirt, you know, which is, if you think about it, it's crazy. But Lamaisa, we're stuck. We don't have anything else that we can do, and we paskin like Shmuel, that we say that Shuda is adif michaluka, that we'd rather do Shuda d'dayne than divide it 50-50. Because we'd rather take our chances that one of them is actually the winner. So, okay. So Lamaisa, that we ended off last time with the cases of Holech Kischi and Holech Lav Kischi. So you have a very complicated Gemara over here on Yadal and Abayz and Gittin, where, you guys get a chance to see that Gemara? So it's a little you don't usually pile on the Shitas and Tanoim so much, the way this Gemara does it. So the Gemara has a complicated Brisa where they pile on a lot of Shitas and Tanoim. So the gist of it is they're trying to bring a raya whether we say Zachem Adam Shalom Bafanav in such a case, right? So we discussed at the end of Shir on Friday, Zachem Adam Shalom Bafanav means that I can make you the proud owner of something even though you're not around, right? I can pick up, I know you always wanted a tissue box, so I see this tissue box on the ground and I pick it up as an Aveda and I'm Mizakeh this person in it. Then on my way home, I realize... that I could really use a tissue right about now. So I decide, okay, then I'm going to take a tissue. So what did I just do? I did an act of Geneva because I used your tissue without your permission, right? So that's not good. So we want you to, you know, if I would have just picked it up and I would have said to myself, oh, you know, I know you could really use a tissue box, I'm going to bring it to you at some point, right? In my mind, not even, I'm going to bring it to you at some point. So then if I want to take a tissue, that's mine. The fact that I intend to later give it to you is irrelevant. But if I pick it up having in mind to be mezake you in it, or if I have hand it to somebody else having in mind that they're mezake you in it, you are now the owner, and if I would take it, I'm stealing. So that's a major issue. You know, huadinami, if something happens to it, huadinami, if it goes up in value, goes down in value, that's all about who the owner was at the time. So then the Gemara is mesupik. Let's say I use the lashon of holich. Use the lashon of holich. And the Gemara has cases where, let's say, somebody dies. The Mishaleach says, right, holich manazel l'ploni, and then ploni dies. Right? So who was the owner of that mana by the time ploni died? Right? So different shitas, right? And then we're talking about, let's say the Meshaleach dies, let's say I say, give it to Ploni, and then I die, so maybe now you're throwing in a new variable called Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Ameis, right? Okay, but Ameis in the end of the day, well, let's say I was a Shechid Meirah to start, there's a lot of different variables, right, that the Gemara plays in. I thought it was just a nice Gemara to see, to play around with all these different variables. You have the concept of Shechid Meirah, right? What's the Yisod of Shechid Meirah? Divrei Shechid Meirah, Kechsuvim, Mukhid Mesurim, Dami. When a Shechid Meirah says something, it is done. Most of the time we say that's not the case, right? Normally, we like to do what we say and say what we do, but if I just say something and I don't make a kinyan, then it doesn't count. I can go back on it, or, if I die right then and there unexpectedly, then it's a separate shaila, not Shechid Meirah, but that's called Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Ameis. But that's the case of Shechid Meirah. Then you had, like we just said, the issue of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Ameis. Let's say we know that this was a wish of the dying person. So that's not the same thing as Shechid Meirah. Shechid Meirah is I'm on my deathbed and I want you to do something for me. So why do we, by the way, what's the reason for the rule by Shechid Meirah? What's the reason for a rule by Shechid Meirah? Yes, but even more than that. We're also, why don't we still necessitate a kinyan on normal circumstances, right? It's really a din of pikuach nefesh. It's really the pikuach nefesh that the Chachamim said, we want the case of Shechid Meirah to work because, right? We don't want to burn him. We don't want him to have a tear of das. We don't want him to go out of his mind worrying that his affairs are not in order, right? I'm imagining that people who have a good understanding that they're about to die very, very much want to get their affairs in order. They want to make sure that certain things are taken care of, especially in those days they didn't have life insurance. So, the person now has life insurance, so it's a little bit of a yeshiva das. At least you know that, like, if I don't make every financial decision I wanted to make, the person's still going to get a payout, from the life insurance company. But in those days, no life insurance. If you don't take care of it now, it will not get taken care of. Right? So now the Chacham said, all right, whatever you say, done. We're not going to think twice about it. We're not going to worry about making kinyanim. You don't have to write it down. Whatever. It's just done. And the kinyan is made. So that way the person will live on because it didn't be kuach nefesh even for a minute or two. Right? Even if the person is going to live. Even Machal Shabbos, if you know the person is going to die, it's understood. The doctors all say the person is going to die. But if you do this act of Chil Shabbos, they'll live a little bit longer. You're also Mechal Shabbos for that. Mechal Shabbos to make them live even a short time longer. Right? They don't have to live Dafka till next Shabbos. That's it's the old Yeshiva Shechakira about what's the reason for Pikuach Nefesh. If it's B'chai Bohem, so then you're even Mechal Shabbos to save a few hours. But if it's Chalil Shabbos Achas, Kadesh Tishmur Shabbos Harbe, so then you shouldn't be Mechal Shabbos for them to live additional time, because they're not going to make it till next Shabbos one way or the other. But L'maisa, that's not the halacha. The halacha is you're Mechal Shabbos even to give them a few more minutes. So that's the idea also behind Divrei Shechid Meirah Kiksuvim Mechimasurim Dami, that you're Mechalel, not Mechalel, you take care of things, financially speaking, that you don't require them to make Kinyanim, you don't require them to do other things, because you want to make sure that everything is taken care of and they feel good about it, and that way they have a Yishev Adas to live as long as they possibly can live. You don't want to throw in mental anguish as another reason why they died a little bit quicker, right? So that's an important thing to keep in mind. There's a lot of great Torah in modern times about stam prolonging people's lives. That's a different story, right? There's a lot of great Rav Moshe has some great tshuvas about, and I'm sure everybody else does too, about when you're permitted to prolong somebody's life. Let's say you're a doctor. You know the person's going to die. It's understood. The only question is, if I do X, Y, and Z, they'll live a little bit longer, but they won't really be able to accomplish very much. They'll just be in a ton of pain, right? You're just prolonging the agony. So is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Right, it's a lot of nice discussions about that. But here we're not talking about any of that. We're talking about you're basically going hands-off. You have the hands-off approach, but included in the hands-off is you don't want to make them crazy. You don't want to make them, cause additional mental anguish. And that's one of the reasons why they said Divrei Shechid Meirah is considered as if it's signed, sealed, and delivered. Okay, so that's one issue over here that the Gemara throws out. And we mentioned mitzvah l'kayim divrei ameis, so I'm not going to get into that right now, but that's basically if it was somebody's last wishes, then maybe you would argue that you're supposed to do it even though it wasn't officially signed, sealed, and delivered. That's a separate issue of the person's last desires before they die. But in the end of the day, we say that it's a machlokes whether holech is kisri or lav kisri, which is essentially a machlokes in diction. Right? What did the guy mean when he said holech? Did he mean zochim adam shalom b'fanav? When I say bring this to so and so, did I mean I want you to be a delivery boy, right? Or did I want you to be a shaliach? Assuming zochim is mitam shlichus, just make life easier for today, right? So I wanted you to be a shaliach to be kona this on behalf of the other person. Make big nafkamina, let's say the guy drops dead before he receives the package, right? So you take $1 billion worth of diamonds, you put them in a little one of those diamond pouches, and you say, okay, holech ze leploni, bring this to Ploni. And then it turns out Ploni dies, and Ploni's children are very sad that Ploni died, but they're also quite happy that they just inherited $1 billion worth of diamonds. Right, and then the mishaleach says, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! I only meant to give it to Ploni. I certainly didn't mean to give it to you guys. Ploni always told me he hated you guys, right? So I didn't want to give you guys anything. So he told me he was planning on being maver nachla from all of you anyway. And he just, as soon as he had some money, he couldn't wait to get his hands on $1 billion so he could write a will for somebody else, right? Or whatever the case is. So lemaisa, at the end of the day, maybe the guy who sent the diamonds doesn't have the right to take it back." Because he was Mizake Ploni already. What did he mean? I want you to be the messenger service, or I want you to be the shaliach, right? That's the difference between a messenger and a shliach. A messenger is a guy who delivers things. A shliach is that person. I'm making him the shliach to be kona on his behalf. That's ki'ilu, I handed it to Ploni already. And if Ploni dies after the fact, then it still belongs to his children. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so that was the big discussion in the Gemara. And the Gemara doesn't come to Maskana. The Gemara shows each Tana maybe holding something else. And then they say, Lamaisa, one of Tanaim Shita is Shuda de Daine, Shuda Adif. It's better do Shuda de Daine. So there it seems like from that Gemara that Rabbeinu Tam really has Rashi where he wants him. Why? Right. Where's the umdana? Where's the umdana? The whole machlokes, holech kisri or holech lav kisri, is a machlokes about what? What does the word holech mean? Right? What does the word holech mean? So you're going to tell me that I'm going to do an umdana about what the word holech means? There's no umdana. Either it means zachen or it doesn't mean zachen. How can you say that there's a machlokes tanoim regarding some kind of an umdana about it's a pella? Right? So that's a really strong raya against Rashi. So it comes out, if you're going to understand Rashi, it comes out a tremendous chiddush in the sugi of holech kischi according to Rashi. What's the chiddush? Yeah, meaning Rashi is understood, at least within that daya in Tanoim, at least within that daya, Rashi understands holech kischi is not the machlokas that we thought it was. You hear? Holech kischi is discussed on an individual basis. Are we going to say holech is kischi or olav kischi today, right here, right now? It's not that there's something magical about the word holech in Talmudic times in Bavel, that they were arguing about whether or not the word holech meant. Now, obviously, I think everybody could agree that holech kischi or lav kischi or tein kischi or lav kischi is not going to carry over to English. It's not going to carry over to Arabic or modern Hebrew, etc. Like you'd have to have a similar debate in every generation based on what people mean. I don't think anybody in the Gemara thought there was like something magical about the word holech that led to this whole machlokes, but nevertheless, At the time, there was a discussion. What does the word holech mean? And Rashi says, that's not the machlokas. Holech kischi or holech lav kischi, yes, it starts with a machlokas, what does holech mean? But specifically, the real machlokas is, what does this guy's holech mean? What did this guy mean when he said holech kischi, when he said holech leploni? That's a big difference. It's a big difference in the sugya holech kischi or lav kischi. So you have to, when you learn the sugya, you have to really go through all the rashis carefully and see if that works. It's not so pasha. Tosfos, very easy. Saying, yeah, holech kischi or lav kischi is a standard, objective machlokes, how you read the word holech. And in the end of the day, there's a shoot at the dine that says, do whatever you want. We don't claim to know what the guy meant when he said holech. Rashi says, no, we got to try to figure out, what did he mean when he said holech? Each time is different. That's a big difference between Rashi and Tosfos over there. But that seems to be, again, once you say that, according to Rashi, it's not so bad. But you have to really come up with a much bigger chiddush. You always try to say the lesser chiddush if it's possible. Right? You know, things are, you know, generally speaking, the simpler argument is the easier one to make. It's the more logical argument, right? Now, obviously, that's not always true. What's a good example? What makes more sense, that the earth is round or the earth is flat? Right? I mean, I don't know. You know anybody standing upside down right now? You know anybody, saying it makes a lot more sense when you're walking down the street. You don't feel like you're going on a curve. You feel like you're going flat. The more logical argument is that the earth is flat. Everyone thinks, oh, these people used to be so stupid. They thought the earth was flat. No, they just never had gone up into space and seen that it's a ball. Like it's not because they weren't smart enough to figure it out. They lacked a certain knowledge that just they weren't privy to at the time. You know, it's not a knock on them. It's actually smarter to say and more simple to say that the earth is flat. Now, obviously, once you introduce all kinds of factors, and we've seen it, like I'm not a massive conspiracy theorist, we've seen the earth from space, it's definitely round. You know, we've flown in airplanes, you know, around the world, it's definitely round. You know, but Lemaisa, if you say to somebody, oh, the earth is round, it sounds ridiculous. Like, what do you mean? It's only true because it's true. It's not true because it's smarter. Right? I mean, like, what's his name? Aristotle in the Rav Soloveitchik mentions this in his Shir on Korach. He says, Aristotle applied all of his philosophical principles to physics. And that's why he wrote a book about physics, which was completely wrong. Because he applied all of his logic principles to physics. Physics is his own thing. Right? That's why he was explaining Korach's mistake when it came to trying to understand halacha. Korach was applying his everyday knowledge and logic to Torah logic, and it wasn't the same. You know, he's saying it was a different discipline. So maybe in Korach's mind, you could argue, Beged Shekulot Cheles, Abayis Malei Sfarim, etc. But Lemais, in the end of the day, Moshe Rabbeinu's logic was a Torah-based logic. It was a different way of looking at the world. You know, so he was saying that. Aristotle thought, why do certain things fall down? You know, why do things fall down? Because they're heavy. Right? So Chafs and Afkamina with what? Let's say you drop a heavy item and a light item. So what's going to fall faster? The heavy item's going to fall faster. In reality, what's the psak? What falls faster? They both fall at the same time. They both fall at the same time. Why? Because they don't fall because they're heavy. They fall because of gravity, right? There's this force that's pulling them down, right? So they don't fall because they're heavy. They fall because of gravity. Now let me ask you, which one of the two arguments is more logical and smarter? You know, things fall down because they're heavy, or there's this invisible man pulling them towards the center of the earth. You know, that's ridiculous. Like, why would you assume that there's this invisible force that yanks on things and pulls them down towards large objects? You know, it's ridiculous, and yet it's absolutely true. You know, everyone thinks Newton's just a guy who an apple fell on his head. Like, he actually said some smart stuff. So the whole concept of gravity is, I would say, a much bigger chiddush, but it happens to be correct. So again, you'd rather say the smaller chiddush, the more logical argument, because usually the smaller chiddush is correct. In this case, Rabbeinu Tam, in this Gemara of Holech Kischi, is a much smaller chiddush. because you don't have to then revamp every case of Olech Kischi, and now you have to learn the whole thing differently. Right? But Lamaisa doesn't mean it's definitely right. Rashi's answer is a good answer, but now you have to relearn every case of Olech Kischi. So it's a much bigger and broader chiddush. Now, sometimes you have a bigger and broader chiddush, like the earth is round and there's such a thing as gravity, which is, you know, correct. And sometimes, you know, you have a bigger chiddush, which is not correct. Right? I think just to exhaust all of my scientific knowledge in one sitting, I think people told me that no one has actually seen the earth revolve around the sun. No one has ever seen it. It's impossible for us to see it because of our position. They said the reason everyone agrees that the earth revolves around the sun is that the formula that they use in physics to figure out that the earth goes around the sun versus that the sun will go around the earth is much, much, much simpler. Meaning, technically, it's possible that the sun does go around the earth. But it would be a much more complicated mathematical formula. It would be a tremendous chiddush if that was true. So they say the smaller chiddush is that the earth goes around the sun. But in reality, it might be that the sun goes around the earth. You know, that might be wrong, but someone who actually knows this stuff once told me that. So, okay. But again, the goal is to try to say a smaller chiddush unless you're the bigger chiddush is true. So that's it's an important thing to keep in mind. But that's Rabbi Natan against Rashi in the Gemara of Tein Kischi. Okay, so going forward now, we...
Is that Gemara consistent with Rabbi Natan and
Kiddushin? Right, so what would be the issue?
Not every shliach is a dayan.
Not every shliach is a dayan?
It's a case where you give that money to go get it... You're not hiring the Bilal Shir for every shliach you ever have.
I would assume not. Right, so I don't think he's saying that this is dafka case of shuda de daine. So this is not shuda de daine. It's just what does the word shuda mean?
Qualitatively different, but it's the same.
Meaning both Rashi and Rabbi Natan agree that the word is consistent. The word shuda is consistent.
Maybe we don't know. The word uses the garment against the rather even if shuda.
Right, but it seems that Rabbi Natan is not doing that. It says, because what does he say over here? He says, Rabbi Natan's medakti, the ain lafare shuda kimosh pirsa kuntris. What? He's just learning what the word means. Right, it says, shuda, it says, and therefore, gabi shneim krovim, shneim shcheinim, shneim talmidei chachamim, shuda de daine, daine shi yedakte adayin es mihoi oev yoser. Seems like he's going to say, look, we have the word shuda, now we know what it means, and now we're going to plug it into shuda de daine. So it's like very important what the word means so that we can figure it out. It's interesting that they just, sometimes they had Gemara words, they just didn't know what they meant. And therefore they try to find all the cases, like Rashi does in Chumash. He'll say, I don't know what this word means, but I know it comes up five times in Tanakh, these are them, you know, here are the five times, and from context I could tell you this is what it means. Okay, so based on all of this, a couple of points. First of all, we have the Ritva and the Ran in our Gemara. Once upon a time, we were learning Masechta Shavuos, Daf Lamed, and the Ritva and the Ran in our Gemara, when they were discussing this pshat over here. So the Ritva in Divrei Maskil Inami Shuda de Daine Mikan Nilmo de Shuda de Daine Hu Masha Yirtza Dain Lasos. When he says to him, you should just realize that this fellow, Rabbi Yosef sent to Rav Nachman. So he says, you should realize that this fellow is a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Why? So either the Mishra Ve Tigre or Shuda de Daine. Says from here we can bring a raya that Shuda de Daine is that the Daine can do whatever he wants. Why is that a raya? What's the raya? This is a raya that the dayan can do whatever he wants. Isn't that a weird raya? What are you talking about? And it's the same. If you look in the Ran, what does the Ran say? Gimel? Yeah, I think so. Where is it? Do you remember where it is? Oh, there it is. You know, Shudan Shanesh Din She'eno Tali Berias Adim Velo Beshrua Elo Biada Dayan Lasos Mimeno Mashi Yirtze Kanamir Mishnei Shtar Ziozim Yom Echad Darmi Perik Misha Yanasui Shudan Dayan Afkan Sholach Le Im Hadin Tali Beshudan Dayan. If it turns out that the whole case is revolves around Shudan Dayan Zer Roy Lazakoso Lefisha Chocham Vitzadiku. This guy is roi to win because he's a chacham and a tzaddik, right? Shuda loshna shlocha. So this is also, you see what he's doing, like Rabbeinu Tam seems to have done in the other Tosas. The word shuda means to hashlocha, right? And he quotes the, right, we had that elsewhere, we used from the Targum and Oz Yashir. So before we get to the Yesh Mefarshim, so we say shuda is basically, since he's a great Talmud chacham, so you should, you know, if you want to do a shuda d'dayna, he should win. What do you mean he should win? What does that mean? If it's all tully and whatever you want to do, so what are we talking about over here? You hear what I'm asking? Like, Rabbeinu Tam, also, where's the raya for Rabbeinu Tam? If anything, I'd say, like, these are kind of rayas for Rashi. No? It comes out that this is... Even within Rabbeinu Tam, or at least that school of thought, doesn't mean that Rabbeinu Tam would agree with this, because you can't force Rabbeinu Tam to agree with these shitas. He never saw them, right? But it seems that even according to the Ran and the Ritva, who like shitas Rabbeinu Tam, it's not something like I said, where it's, you know, if this guy's wearing a red shirt and this guy's wearing a green shirt, so I say green means go, so he gets to win, and red means stop, so he has to lose. No. What is it? There's certain people who are more rightly to be chosen than others. There's certain people who are more... There is not an, I wouldn't say objective, but there are certain subjective criteria that many can agree on. And therefore, if you're going to make a selection, select this guy. Not because... Meaning, what's the difference between Rashi and these Deos? Right? They wouldn't say that they hold like Rashi, yeah? Right, meaning Rashi would say, I sent you to tell you this guy's a big, big tzaddik. And if he says so, Rashi saying, take that into account, that if this guy says something happened, one factor to weigh in on is that this guy's a big tzaddik, and if he's saying it, it's probably true. In my shuda d'dayne, I'm gonna factor in, or, you know, that's not a good example. A better example would be if this guy's a big, big tzaddik, so probably all who encountered him liked him. And maybe he would be better friends with him since he was such a big, big tzaddik. Or, if I can, maybe the guy in question did not like tzaddikim. He was, you know, like, he was Rabbi Akiva before he went to yeshiva. He didn't like Talmidei Chachamim, right? So he decided that he's going to not want to give it to this big tzaddik. He wants to give it to a Rasha Kimoso or a Benoni Kimoso. He, Dafka, wants to give it to an average Joe. He doesn't want to help big tzaddikim. Big tzaddikim, they already have Hashem helping them. He doesn't want to help. Right? So that's good enough. You know, so whatever the cheshbon is inside that cheshbon of Shudah Dainei, it's all about the reality of who should win. Right? Who should have won the case? That's Rashi. Whereas the Ran and the Ritva are not saying like that. They're saying what? It's not about who should have won. It's about? No, deserves to win means you're right. Meaning deserves to win means you actually win. It's not about who deserves right to win. It means maybe it's about who deserves to be picked. Who deserves to be chosen. Right? It's not about who actually won this case. Maybe this big tzaddik actually deserves to lose this case. But since I don't have any evidence one way or the other, and I have to select somebody, I'm going to pick him. Because I'd rather pick a big tzaddik than not a big tzaddik. Not because I think that makes him correct. I just think that it's 50-50 either way, so I'm going to pick him. You understand? The difference, it's a Rashi, this version of Shuda D'Dayne, or you could call it this version of Rabbeinu Tam if you want, or this version of Shuda D'Dayne is still totally different than Rashi, but it's not as different as you would think. Right? It's not based on nothing, it's based on something, but it's not about choosing the winner of the case, it's about just stop choosing the person you want to pick. Which is, you know, obviously not Rashi. Right? So this is just to plug it back in a little bit to our discussion of the Gemara with Rav Sheshes and Rav Nachman. Right? So Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes had the case where Rav Nachman said, I think that the shtar went out according, you know, went out to this one. Rav Sheshes said, I went out to this one first, and therefore this person should win. Right? And Rav Nachman made the other person the winner. And Rav Sheshes said, hey, I did a shoe did the dine. I did a proper, you know. Rav Sheshes said, why are you overruling me? That's mean. Right? And then he said, no, because, you know, we're not in Yerushalayim and we don't write shos and shtaros, and therefore the halacha is it doesn't matter which one went out earlier. We don't factor that in to the case. And then he says back, yeah, but, so he says, well, how do you decide? I did a shud d'dayin, he says, Rav Nachman. Rav Sheshes, I also did a shud d'dayin. So he said back, no, I'm a dayin, you're not a dayin. Right? So he said, and furthermore, it wasn't even a shud d'dayin. You said why. It wasn't a shud d'dayin. So basically, the simple answer, Rashi and the Rishbam, is that I have Rishus from the Rish Galusa to be done cases, and you don't. So on Friday, I mentioned Rav Slavolovsky's shot over there, that it's all Tully based on the Dvar Avram, that it's Tully in Dina de Malchusa, and therefore Hefker based in Hefker is what makes Shud Daini work in the first place. And therefore, it's Tully in Dina de Malchusa, which the Rish Galusa was officially the guy in charge of the Jewish people's. You know, he was the liaison to the secular governments that the Jewish people had, and they give him the autonomy to judge the Jewish people. And if you had Rishus from the Reish Galusa, you could do Hefker Beis and Hefker, and if you didn't have Rishus from the Reish Galusa, you couldn't. That was one way of looking at it, right? And then, but as we see, that there's another possibility, which is that you could just suggest, very simply, that Rashi understands that Shud d'dayne is an umdana. An umdana is not an official psak in the rules of the Gemara, the Mishnah, and the rules of how you're going to do things. I mean, you have certain things that we'll call a psak bezdin, and sometimes you have, and those are official, like maisa bezdin, etc. And sometimes you have something else, right? What are another examples of an act that bezdin will do which is not an official psak, right? The most famous one probably is. What? I don't want to get involved in Pshara. Pshara is a great discussion, but let's, for argument's sake, let's say Pshara is a very chashuv, a maisa beis, an official and everything, right? It's not split the difference. Very important to keep in mind, Pshara doesn't mean, well, you say he owes him 100, I say he owes him 50, let's compromise, I say you owe him nothing, let's compromise 50-50. That's not Pshara. Pshara is something with much more than that. Okay, but lamaisa, so let's assume for argument's sake, Pshara does count as a real psak beis din, but the simple answer of Beis Din, of the definition of a siluk on behalf of the Beis Din is kol olam gavar, right? Kol olam gavar is the Beis Din basically throwing up their hands, saying we don't know what to do, and therefore we say kol olam gavar, you guys settle this amongst yourselves. We cannot act. We're frozen. We can't act on this case, and therefore we say kol olam gavar, and then the Rishonim try to figure out what kind of an act is kol olam gavar. The Rush, I think it's the Rush, it could be forgetting, the Rush in Shnayim Ochsin seems to indicate that he thinks kol olam gavar is a real psak Beis Din. But the standard approach to kol olam gavar is it's a siluk of the Beis Din. They're removing themselves from the case. They're not interested in getting involved because they just said, we can't do it, we don't know. We can't act in this case, and therefore we hope that you guys will be able to settle this amongst yourselves. You know, that's it. So shud d'dayne is a secondary form of that, which is it's not official, but we're going to give it a shot. We're going to give it a shot. We think we can act on this case in a way that you'll be able to reach a maskana. That you know, we can, at least we the Beis Din can be happy with. it's not quite at the level of kol dolem gavra. We're not willing to completely remove ourselves. Just the opposite. We're going to take over the case, and we're going to make a decision. Is that decision count as a real psak beis din? So I believe that could be part of the big machlokas between Rashi and Minatam. Why? Because Rashi would say, no, it's an umdana. It's an umdana. That's not a real psak beis din. It's not based on the regular rules. Regular rules of beis din, edus, shvua, real, you know, rayas. Not just like what we think. You know, that's not, this is not, when I was a kid, there was a show, The People's Court, right? There was, you know, the guy, he'd make a taina, he'd make a taina, and the judge would say whatever he wants, you know? So that's shuda d'dayani. It's not a real psak, and therefore, it doesn't follow the normal rules of psak bezin. You need rishus from the reish galusa to do it. Because we're worried about, it's all working based on hefker bezin hefker. It's all basically the Dayan saying, look, by the power vested in me by the Reish Galusa, I hereby pronounce the money yours, or I hereby pronounce it the other guy's. It's not a real Psak Beis Din. And Rabbeinu Tam says, no, what do you mean? Umdana is one of the tools that Beis Din uses. That's a real thing. I don't need Rishus from the Reish Galusa to have a brain. You understand? I don't need Rishus from the Reish Galusa to decide who I want to win. I'm sorry, who should have won properly. That's another tool. What are you going to tell me that Bazin, they're a bunch of robots? Bazin's a bunch of robots. They only said, why would you ever need Dayanim? You just have a rule book. Right? They make fun of certain, what's his name? Who's the Yankees manager? Girardi, right? They make fun of Girardi. They say he manages out of a rule book. He has like, if it's this, do that. If it's this, do that. If it's this, do that. So what do you ever need Dayanim for? You don't need a manager. You just get the rule book and you can just make all your decisions. Right? So, same thing. What do you need a Dayan for? Just, just give the rules. You never need an actual court of law in Judaism. You just have, these are the rules. This is what they do. No, umdana is when the Dayan makes a cheshbon based on whatever evidence or lack of evidence is presented to him. Not every case, probably a decent percentage of cases, is going to be so clear cut that came up everything in the Gemara exactly so, right? And therefore, the Dayan is going to have to make a real decision. So that's what a shuda d'dayanei is. I'm sorry, that's not what a shuda d'dayanei is. That's a real case, says Rabbeinu Tam. And therefore, shuda d'dayanei has to be understood as much more than that. Shuda d'dayanei is, mamish, we have nothing we can do. We've racked our brains on top of the standard piskei halacha of edim and shtaros and shvuos and all kinds of other important things and rayas that are going to come up in a court case. We've looked at all of that. And aval pichein, we don't have anything to say. And then we tried the cheshbon the umdana. And aval pichein, we have nothing to say. Now we're just going to pick a winner. That's not a real maisa based in. An umdana based on the evidence presented in front of us and the claims and who we think based on, you know, that's evidence in American court. They call it circumstantial evidence, right? That's what circumstantial evidence is. Based on this, when you in American court, what is an aide? What's a witness in American court? Did he see anything? No. He doesn't know it. 90% of the aidim they call on the stand are not aidim. They're people who know something about something which is kind of related to the case. Right? I went to high school with this guy and I know he's a really nice guy. He couldn't have killed anybody. That's so irrelevant. So he was a nice guy in high school. Did he kill the guy or not? What did he do? You understand? I am a psychologist who never met the person, but I can tell you, people who do what he did are insane. Shkayach. Like, what is that? So, okay, so Rashi would say, that's not real Maisa Beis Din. That's not real. That's circumstantial evidence, and any decisions made based on claims like that would be, you'd need Rishus for the Reish Galusa to do Hefker Beis Din Hefker. Right? And Rabbeinu Tam would say, no, that's part of the system, is use your brain. You got this psychologist who says that this would probably be the case under these circumstances. You think he's right. Make a cheshbon. That's how you make a decision. That's a real nice abeis din. That's not shuda d'dayanei. You don't need Rishus from the Reish Galusa to do that. And that's what Rav Nachman was saying to Rav Sheshes. You admitted yourself it wasn't Shuda de Daine. You admitted it. Right? So you're saying that you said you had a real reason. So once you have a real reason, it's not Shuda de Daine. So I think that's one very simple way you can explain the Machlokas Rashi Minatam based on what we've seen. Now, just to be honest, the Ritva over there has a totally different explanation. He just says, right, if you saw the Shita Mekubetzis, he quotes the Ritva, and then he writes that the probable pshat in that Gemara is that Rav Nachman was just mad at Rav Sheshes for doing it. He didn't really, in a chinami, Rav Sheshes could have done Shuda D'Dayane. He could have done Shuda D'Dayane if he wanted to. He didn't need Rishus from any Reish Galusa or anything like that. But he just thought that he was dead wrong by making such a decision, and therefore he said that, first of all, you're not even a real Dayan, so you can't do Shuda D'Dayane. And second of all, you gave me the reason and it wasn't Shuda D'Dayane. So how can you say that it was a Shuda D'Dayane case? Okay, so the Ritva says, yeah, the Iker is what he said second, and the first statement he had was just a shtachim a little bit, right? So he said, of course, it's impossible to say that Rav Sheshes couldn't have done Shuda D'Dayane. Sheshes is a big deal, you know. He wasn't Stama Amora, you know. He wasn't even just Stama Amora. He was a big Amora, right? So even Stama Amora is big, and Rav Sheshes was a big Amora. So how could you say that? How could you say that he wasn't a bucky enough to do Shuda D'Dayane? It's hard to say. So if you say the Reish Galusa pshat, it's not so bad. If you say the Beis Din Kavua pshat, it's not so bad. But the Ritva just says, nah, he just meant to shtach him a little bit because he thought his reasoning was bad. So, okay. And then we had, hopefully you got a chance to see the Rabbeinu Yonah, just pointing out the sheet of the Gaonim that we don't do Shuda D'Dayane Bizman Hazeh. Again, what would be a reason for that we don't do Shuda D'Dayane Bizman Hazeh? We don't have a Reish Galusa. Meaning it's very good. If you say pshat is all based on Hefker, Beis Din Hefker, and the whole thing is not a real Maisa Beis Din anyway, so then, okay, you can see why we can't do Shuda D'Dayane Bizman Hazeh. Okay, Lamaisa, the Poskim debate this. There's a comment in the Shach, very bekitzer, where he throws in, he's like, yeah, some say we don't do this Bizman Hazeh, it's not so clear. And he sends you somewhere, but in the end of the day, where he sends you is not so clear either. And then it's a question whether or not we do any of these things Bizman Hazeh. Do we do Lemishrei Tigrei, Bereisha Bizman Hazeh? That's also questionable. I gave you some of the Maror Makomos on the last source sheets. That's a debate whether or not we even do any of these halachas for Talmidei Chacham and Bizman Hazeh. Could be that we don't do Tvias Ayin Bizman Hazeh. Maybe people don't have a din of a Talmud Chacham, Benogetit, the Sma holds that way. We don't do Tvias Ayin Bizman Hazeh because there's no real din of a Talmud Chacham Bizman Hazeh. Obviously, we have people who are Talmud Chachamim, but there's no official like dinim of Talmud Chachamim that you could be Motzi Mamon and stuff like that because someone's a Talmud Chacham. But the Pesachei Tshuva over there quotes a number of sources that say that, we definitely do have din Talmud Chacham. We do accept the Tvias Ayin. We do hold the Mishrei Tigrei Bereisha Bizman Hazeh. So, okay. But it's questionable, at least, to discuss whether or not these dinim apply Bizman Hazeh. Next sugya also, we'll see that we actually accept that the whole sugya doesn't apply Bizman Hazeh. We let the people sit. Bizman Hazeh, we let everybody sit. So, okay. Lemaisa, just to close with what's nogea, I think armed with this, with everything we've discussed, it's very easy to understand the machlokes between the marshal and the marsha, right? So you guys get a chance to see the marshal and the marsha? If you didn't get a chance, check it out. I think hopefully if we know a little bit about this, you know, a little bit of what we've been talking about, you know, what they're saying is at least, you know, you could understand them very well. So we had a machlokas here where let me just get the kids a version, sorry. We had a machlokas here that our Tosvos, right, in our Tosvos, so Tosfos said that according to Rabbi Natam, that Shuda D'Dayane means that you give it to whomever you wish. So what are we talking about here? That the fellow who came in was also a Talmud Chacham, meaning not only was the person Rav Yosef was sending, I keep forgetting, Rav Ula what? Rav Ula Rabbi Eloi, he was a great Talmud Chacham, but the person he was going against was also a Talmud Chacham. Right? So that's Kohen Rabbeinu Tam, because if you don't hold like Rabbeinu Tam on that one, so then, or not even, if you hold like Rabbeinu Tam on that one, then if one of them is a Talmud Chacham, one of them is not a Talmud Chacham, so we already said in the Gemara that he would choose, the average person would choose a Talmud Chacham before not Talmud Chacham, and that would be an umdana that was part of the case, not a shudu the dayanim. Right? So therefore, Rabbeinu Tam must be talking about a case where they are both Talmidei Chacham. That seems to be the Pshat and Rabbeinu Tam according to our Tosfos. And the Marshal just comments on that the whole idea of Shudah Dayan is totally in whatever the Dayan wants. And therefore, what Dayan would want to give to an Amah Aretz against the Talmud Chacham. And therefore, if one guy was a Talmud, was an Amah Aretz, then there would be no Shudah the Dayane. Because there's no wanting an Amah Aretz over a Talmud Chacham. But according to Rashi, that Shudah Dayane is you choose who you think the winner really is. So it doesn't really matter if one guy's a big Talmud Chacham and one guy's not. So then that doesn't mean that the Talmud Chacham actually deserves to win. It doesn't mean he deserves to win. It just means, it just means he's a Talmud Chacham. So the Marsha gets upset about this Marsha. Why? Why does Marsha get upset about it? He says he's against the Gemara. What are you talking about? He says, if one guy's a Talmud Chacham, one guy's not a Talmud Chacham, it doesn't even come to Shudah D'Dayanei. Because that's one of the actual normal Piskei Halacha of Beis Din. That's one of the normal ways that you make the Cheshbon. Right? So he says that wouldn't even be a Shudah D'Dayanei. So therefore, the Marsha says that we're talking about two Talmidei Chachamim, but what he was just saying, Rav Yosef was telling Rav Nachman, you should realize this guy is mamash and adam gadol. This guy is like, all right, there are people who know their stuff, and there are people who are really off the charts. You know, not everybody's going to make it to the walls of the Morashah Beis Medrash. You know, that's certain people are mamash off the charts. They're really super chashiv, and they're ra'oi to be treated a little bit differently. Now, it's interesting what the Marsha would say. That's an interesting little chiddush of the Marsha, which is basically you don't, when the Gemara says you see if one guy's a Talmud Chacham, one guy's not a Talmud Chacham, it doesn't mean if one guy's a Talmud Chacham and one guy's mamish a adam gadol b'Torah, right? That's not a cheshbon. That's interesting. It could be that the Marsha would say, "What are you talking about? That's also a cheshbon." Right? If you say one guy is a regular, he's a rabbi. You know, he's a, you know, people come over to him, they say, "Rabbi, is this a good hashgacha?" Now, by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with just being a rabbi. You know, I'm not even a rabbi, so it's okay. But he says he's a guy. He knows how to learn, and he can answer some basic shilas. And then you have one guy who's the guy that guy goes to when he doesn't know the answer. You know, so there's a big difference. So that's the Marsha would say. That's also together. One guy's a Talmud Chacham and one guy's not a Talmud Chacham. Now, just on different levels, right? If you go to certain towns in Eretz Yisrael, you say, one guy, he knows only Nashim and Ezekin cold. Ah, so he's okay. But this guy knows everything cold. Okay, so he's a Talmud Chacham. You know, and then this guy knows not only all of Shas, he knows Yerushalmi cold, and he knows Shulchan Aruch with all the Nosei Kehillim cold. All right, so he's an Adam Gadol. You know, okay, so there's different definitions for different places. So so the bottom line here is that Marshal could argue that even within our Tosfos, if you would have to say that they were both Talmidei Chachamim of similar stature, because if one guy was, you know, that otherwise that would also be considered a Talmud Chacham versus not a Talmud Chacham. And the Marshal says no. Once there's a mitzvah to be Mahana Talmud Chacham from your Nechassim, and therefore the Gemara said, as part of the Cheshbon, is one guy a Talmud Chacham, is one guy not a Talmud Chacham. So if one guy is not a Talmud Chacham at all, so there's no inyan to be Mahanehim. It doesn't say that like only the biggest Talmidei Chachamim should benefit from, you know, your Nechassim. He says like, should be Mahanehim, somebody who is begetter a Talmud Chacham, right? The Ramah has qualifications for what a Talmud Chacham is. But in the end of the day, the Ramah writes right? What's also Talmud Chacham? Somebody who people in your time, in your area, would call a Talmud Chacham. He's also a Talmud Chacham. You know, that's you know, a friend of mine, somebody, his kid wants to ask him, are you a Talmud Chacham? So he wisely answered. He said, I'm a Talmud Chacham according to the Ramah. You know, he says, in my time, my place, people call me a Talmud Chacham. So he says, am I a Talmud Chacham according to the real Psak L'Shulchan Aruch that he's holding in Rov Mekomos B'Shas and that he could answer questions in Halacha and Rov Mekomos? No. I mean, he might be, but I'm saying he holds no. You know, and but he said, I'm a Talmud Chacham according to the next line in the Ramah. He says, yeah, Shomer, man, I know anybody they call a Talmud Chacham is good enough. You know, okay, so that's what the Marsha is saying, that to be for the Inyan of who would win the case, you just have to be begetter that kind of a Talmud Chacham. Aye, the other guy is massive, he's off the charts. Okay, that doesn't matter. That's not part of the cheshbon. You know? Okay. I think it's enough shuda d'ayini. All right, Bezer Hashem, tomorrow we'll start with the Isser, the Din of Amida, B'Shas Gemar Din, B'Shas Edus, etc. And then we'll move on to a little nice, easier topic of Amid Lefnei Ishes Chaver, and Kavod HaTorah, Kavod HaBrius, you know, some very cheerful topics. Okay. Baldic. Everybody stay where you are. If you have to go to the bathroom.